Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Here we go again with another episode of Spin the Rally Pod. And on the start list for this episode and interrupting his holiday, roaming reporter and voice of rally Colin Clark. I'm going to come back to that holiday very shortly. Also enjoying a hard-earned day off is former sporting director George Donaldson. And joining us shortly, hopefully with breaking news, will be Dirtfish.com's senior staff writer David Evans. I'm rally fan and radio broadcaster Lisa O'Sullivan. Welcome to Spin the Rally Pod. If you haven't tuned in before, we hope you enjoy what we're going to be chatting on about. And I have to apologise because, first of all, we're starting off with the fact that, Colin, you are digging into your deepest Hemingway and the old man in the scene. You're spending your holiday fishing, I notice.
Well, not quite spending the whole holiday fishing, but yeah, I definitely had a day's fishing yesterday, and it was a whole load of fun, Lisa. I have to say, I do quite enjoy a little bit of fishing. And I also have to say that, you know, I only keep what I eat. So anything that's caught, if we have, normally that's not an issue, because normally I don't catch anything when I go fishing. But yesterday I went out fishing with my kids and my brothers, actually. It was very pleasant indeed. And we went out on this lovely boat out of a place called Saundersfoot in Pembrokeshire. And do you know what? The fish were jumping into the boat. I've never known a day like it. We had 5 hours, and just about every time we stopped and put the rods down, we were catching things. And it was absolutely, the day was totally, you know, capped by the biggest thing I've ever caught. I'm not sure if it was a shark, but it looked like a shark, and it was as big as a shark. And it fought like a shark, and it was entertaining. But that also, a couple of lovely pictures with Mr. Shark, and he went back into the sea. Yeah, well, we're having a family holiday, Lisa. And I have to say, you know, as a lot of people, I'm sure, around the world are doing this year, family holidays more or less at home, only 3 or 4 hours away from home. And it's been a fantastic week. It really has.
Do you reckon it was a shark, George?
I'm not sure, but I have just been this morning on my day off browsing through something, and I've seen something even more splendid than Colin's shark, because I've been looking at McLean's photographs, his top 10 iconic safari photographs on the Dirtfish website, and number 5 out of 10, if you care to have a look, there's a nice photograph of two cars driving through mud pools, mud tracks in the mud and the splashing, with a helicopter above them. I'm driving the car as you look at it on the left.
Is that right?
Oh, is that
you? Yes, it says it's Hugh Kankin and Ian Duncan, but it was a post shot. It was the best ever 5 days. The best ever 5 days of my life, probably just about.
I have to say, I was lured in by the giraffe.
Yeah, the giraffe lures you in, but the shot 5 out of 10. I'm driving the car on the left, and it was a 5 day photo shoot. We had a helicopter, we had film crew. Reinhard Klein was with us. Had two mechanics, myself and Ian Duncan driving, and various bits of sound crew, and Uwe Anderson's wife, Marion Bell Anderson, was co-driving in either of the cars.
Just to get that photograph.
Yeah. Well, that was just a lucky happenstance. We drove 4,500 kilometres in, 4.5 days.
Wow.
Seeking out two car photograph opportunities. And we shot off, I mean, an amazing amount of footage. And I drove the whole of the rally route. The whole of the rally route.
We've talked at length, haven't we, about the safari and the attraction of the safari. But one of the things we didn't really talk about was the fact that the safari just gives you those just iconic, wonderful photo opportunities. And really, you know, Colin McMaster's put his top 10 photographs from the safari on Dirtfish this week. You know, a number of those would feature in your top 10 photographs of all time, because the safari just gives you those great opportunities, doesn't it? And that's kind of what we're missing out on this week. But we are looking forward to going to next week. But I was going to say, Georgie, that one of our very kind listeners has put on Facebook, and I haven't responded to him yet. It's Peter. Peter, thank you very much indeed. He found a fantastic photograph of you 20 years ago, George, with a very young, I think it's Petter Solberg. You're not tagged in it, but I will tag you in it. But I'm going to put a request out to our listeners. If you can find any old photographs, not of me or Lisa, but particularly George and then David Evans.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Know, if you can find any, tag us in them, let us know. We'll give you a shout out.
Are we offering prizes, Colin?
What's that, Georgie?
Prestige. Are we offering prizes?
No, just prestige.
No.
I want to know if David's still wearing the same pair of cords that he had about 20 years ago.
Well, he's probably wearing the same jumper, that's for sure. a little story. He, we went up to M Sport last week, myself and David.
Yeah.
And Hakey, our cameraman at Dirtfish. We had a fantastic 2 days, and I cannot thank Mr. and Mrs. Wilson enough for their unbelievable hospitality and openness. We're making a little series of videos on, in particular, Malcolm Wilson. But, the story behind M Sport, where it is, where it started from, how it developed, and where it is now and where it hopes to be in the future. And it was just quite a wonderful couple of days up there. But anyone that's seen any of my social media pictures over the last 4 or 5 months will know that I've been living in Dirtfish kit, because it's so good and it's so comfortable. But my Dirtfish kit are shorts and T-shirts and hoodies. And I'm not a hoodie person, or I wasn't until I joined Dirtfish. But I've discovered the love of Dirtfish hoodies. But David phoned me up before we went up to M Sport and said, Col, you can't really wear shorts and a hoodie if we're going to spend a couple of days with Malcolm, because, as everyone knows, Malcolm Wilson is a man of absolute elegance.
Yeah,
he said, I said, look, I haven't got anything else,
your
David.
Word, George.
Yes, immaculate.
No comment.
I haven't got anything else, David. And he said, don't worry, I've got one of my Dirtfish shirts and Dirtfish sweaters. And I'm thinking, those are the Marks and Spencers ones that he's had branded himself, aren't they? So when you see the videos, you will see that I did actually put on his Marks and Spencers Dirtfish shirt, which looked quite nice. I drew the line at the Marks and Spencer sweater. I would not put it on, unfortunately.
He's such a snob. What's wrong with the Marks and Sparks jumper?
It's nothing wrong with Marks and Spencer's jumpers. I've enjoyed a number of them in the past. I said to David, he looked in his kit, he looked like a kind of middle manager looking after a production line for some big production company somewhere. Didn't go down well, George. Didn't go down well.
No, I have to say, you've been teasing us quite a lot. I don't know about you, George, but I'm very jealous of your trip to Dovenby Hall in Cumbria. And you have teased us about what you saw and what you did. But I'm yet to look at pictures, watch video, read many articles. What can you tell us that you haven't told us already? Well, spill the beans.
George, you've been around, George, since the early days, haven't you? You competed against Malcolm,
that doesn't make
I would
me
imagine.
Old, does it?
Did I do any rallies that Malcolm was doing? I did a couple of Scottish rallies when I was in a Mini, and he would be in an Audi Quattro, probably, or the like.
But he does remember you, George. He does remember you from those days.
Interestingly enough, Malcolm's first ever foray to Kenya was 1987, I think it was. Pretty sure. No, it was maybe 1988. And we put him in the team put him in 1988. We put him in a chase car with one of our mechanics. Now, what was his name? I can't quite remember the mechanic's name. Fabulous guy, an engine guy. Anyway, Malcolm was absolutely just, honestly, it was full culture shock. And he had the best time of his life. He was like a kid in a sweet shop. Back then it was open road racing. Mm. And he was in a replica rally car doing a legitimate job on the rally. It was open road racing.
To remember that Malcolm was a very, very decent driver in his time. He was very highly regarded. He, as part of our 2 days up at M Sport, we went into the old museum that I think it's Elaine, Malcolm's wife. No, it's Malcolm's mum. It's Malcolm's mum that looks after the museum there. And there were some old Fiat overalls. And I said to Malcolm, I said, where are they from? And he said, South Africa. He drove a bit in South Africa in the very early days, George.
He probably did a couple of Australia Southern Cross rallies.
Possibly.
Back in
he
the,
did.
Back
Do you know
in
what
the
he
70s.
Did? He did.
Yeah. Okay. I've got... I've got a proposal for Malcolm Wilson now. This is an unbeatable offer. Well, I think it's unbeatable. He'll probably just snigger. But seeing as he's never done Safari Rally, I think he should do the Classic Rally, and yeah. I think he should do it in an Escort. Yeah. And honestly, he needs a riding mechanic running with him that knows the safari rallies of old, that's been around a fair bit of the route. Oh, I could do that for him. I could like Malcolm. Malcolm and I have never had any arguments. I'm sure we've had disagreements, but never arguments. It's always been very civil. I mean, Malcolm, as we all know, is a very, very civil man. So it's good fun.
Well, do you know what,
and I think we'd have an absolute blast, because Malcolm, apart from anything else, I mean, you've got to love Malcolm when he's amused, because he's just the funniest guy. You know, he's just when he gets tickled, when somebody tickles him, he's in hoots of laughter with it. Great fun. I'm up for it, Malcolm, if you ever listen. Yeah.
But George, do you know what was up there as well in the little museum area? It was the Escort that they built for the Mark II Escort they built for the Classic RAC that him and John Millington won four years ago. Yeah. The car was basically, you know, it was built for that event, and they just finished it the day before. But yeah, so yeah, we were up there, and really we were up there just to have a look at what was going on and just how things were, because, you know, it's easy to forget that M Sport is a completely different operation from, you know, Tommy Mäkinen's operation in Finland and from the Hyundai operation in Germany. You know, they very much are a private company, and yes, they are supported by Ford, and Ford continue to support them, you know, and they're supporting them in terms of the development of the new 2022 car and all the cars that they make in the M Sport family, if you like. But, you know, big companies will be able to, you know, they'll come out the other side of this crisis that we're going through, and they'll be able to gather themselves and move on. Whereas a privately owned and run company like M Sport, you know, it's very precarious. George, you've been telling us many times over the last few weeks just how many companies are going to go bust, are going to go to the wall, how many people will lose their jobs. You know, that was a very, very real possibility 3 or 4 months ago up at M Sport. And Malcolm is very honest about it. And he said, had it not been for the government support through March, April, May, M Sport could well have closed. He says it was as really difficult as that, the period that they went through, and they continue to go through because they rely on cars running. You know, if cars aren't running on rallies, they're not selling cars, they're not selling parts, they're not servicing engines, they're not rebuilding engines and gearboxes and differentials and all the rest. They require rallies to run for their business model to work, and it really is not the best time at M Sport. But what was great was the fact that they're still looking to the future. They're still looking very positive. And really, the biggest sign of that, the biggest, most obvious, most tangible sign of that, is this incredible test track and development centre that they're building. And I have to tell you, the test track is enormously impressive. It's, I think, in its longest configuration, it's about 3 kilometres long. But what's more impressive is the building that's going up next to it, which will be a high-tech development center next to the track, and it's just absolutely vast. And yeah, they've had to perhaps.
Is the track tarmac, Colin?
It's tarmac. Yeah. You know, so it's a tarmac track. It's not a race track, and it's not licensed for racing, so you won't get races there. But it's basically the idea behind it is that your manufacturers, any manufacturer, can book the test center, and you've got everything there. You've got your machining rooms. You've got, obviously, your really high-tech equipment, everything you need, really, to develop parts and develop race cars, if any cars, race cars, road cars, whatever it might be. It's all there. It's all on site. You can get the car onto the track, test it. If something's not right, you can go away. You can rework the car. You can machine parts. You can test things in the various simulations they've got there. And you're back on the track the next day with your newly worked car. It's a really, really, really impressive setup. You know, it's private, which a lot of these manufacturers want. You know, you can absolutely guarantee privacy there, and it's all on the doorstep, if you like. And you know, Malcolm is still, he said, yeah, we're going to have to just think about perhaps, you know, how we use this going forward, how we sell it going forward, and that might change as a result of the downturn that we're all going to face because of COVID. But he still very much sees there being a future for that test track and that development centre. And he says it's, you know, It's more or less full steam ahead. The day we were there, there were probably 100, 120 folk working on the track and on this. Well, the track's finished more or less, but on the development centre. And it was good to see. It was really good to see because, you know, all the talk of not the negative, not talk of negativity, but all the concerns that people around motorsport have had for various development companies, you know, you had to fear for M Sport. But Malcolm was very, very positive, and that was fantastic to see.
How much would you like to have had resources like that at your fingertips, George, when you were a team boss?
It's quite a different operational setup. We just built rally cars at Toyota, and that's, you know, where I'll base my core comments.
But
to
be able to take deluxe drive-in testing.
If we wanted to shake cars down in Germany, it was quite a palaver. There was some military testing grounds just south of Cologne that I believe that we could have accessed, but I can't remember we ever did. I remember it being discussed. The shakedown for the cars after they were built, one of our senior foremen would take them down the autobahn. So we'd go out to the west of Cologne on the A4, I think it was. And once you got past Kerpen, once you got past Kerpen, that's where Michael Schumacher was born. The motorway was unrestricted, so the cars could get a decent shakedown down that road and make sure that they could all reach top speed and were behaving themselves before they came back for their last checks onto the trailer and off out. Yeah, but Belgium and Holland were our destinations. So we had a rallycross track in Belgium, Valkenswaard. It was about 2.5 hour drive away to get there.
Well, and this, George, this is the great thing, George, about what Malcolm's developed up at M Sport, is it is all there, and it is absolutely state of the art technology that's going into the development centre.
It's a different
centre.
Purpose. It's not purposed at rally cars. It's purposed for road car development, and what an incredible facility.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, massive plans, well established, but to be continuing to see him pouring his personal money into that during this lockdown must have taken an awful big heart to do that. Of course, you know, you're in for a penny, in for a pound. You've got to keep going. There's no backing out. But crikey, he must have been looking at that thinking, will this pay off? And he'll still be thinking that yet because, you know, car manufacturers, will they be in? Well, they'll have to invest money in development of cars always. It's difficult to cut back on that. You might cut back on all sorts of things. You can't cut back on advertising, on promotion.
But the way we're moving,
you don't want to cut the quality. You've got to develop the cars.
Don't you think there's going to be more money needed for development, seeing as we're moving towards a hybridisation of the sport?
Well, again, from rally, whether that facility is geared to that, I don't have the understanding. But I think in general, cars, you know, our general transport has always been changing. It's always been developing. We're reaching I don't think we're quite at a watershed point where we're going to get away from internal combustion engines. There's all sorts of incomplete arguments about the pros and cons of everything. Battery technology, which I keep trying to fully understand how efficient a battery is. And my understanding is they're not as efficient as we might like to be led to believe. But I do also understand that taking lithium out of the planet, it's a dirty process, and I don't think that's overly nice. Then you imagine that you know, I've seen huge quarries being, I've seen huge coal mines, you know, open cast coal mines in Scotland being opened up, and they look awful when they're being done, but when they're finished and closed, they are completely and absolutely reinstated. All the topsoil's taken away when they start, and they make huge artificial hills out of it. And 6 years later, when they finish mining, they fill them back in again. And you know what? You never know. They've been there. Yeah. So if they do the same with the lithium,
George,
stuff for the batteries.
George,
I've got a little inkling that George, David Evans has joined
us. I've got a question. Good morning, everybody. Sorry, I'm
late.
Good
morning, David.
Good morning.
Interesting story being written. I'll come to that shortly. But George, I have genuinely got a question, which please can you explain to me the process of electrolysis?
Electrolysis, probably not. No.
No. I have been working with the fabulous Julia Fry from Extreme E this morning. Julia and I have been trying to figure out how...
That's what a fuel cell does, isn't it? It's basically...
Yes, exactly.
It's a fuel cell technology, yeah.
Lisa, I'm so sorry. Why did I not ask you that question? I'm terribly sorry. So essentially,
why do you want to know about electrolysis? Use it for hair removal. Is there something else you want to tell us?
Extreme E, as we know, they are embarking on this brilliant new project for next year.
Oh, so exciting.
And they are completely self-sustaining. So they are producing these fuel cells, H-power fuel cells, which produce hydrogen. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that this cell will stand alone, and it can stand alone in the middle of a desert or wherever you want it to stand alone. Mm-hmm. And it is essentially completely self-powering. So it produces electricity. So Julia sent the release through, which is brilliant. And then she added a bit more detail, but I still am so stupid. I didn't get it. So I've been working from quite early this morning. So I actually woke the children up on the first day of their summer holidays and asked them to explain to me the process of making hydrogen, which they did brilliantly. But fundamentally, this cell thing you need an electrical current to produce.
Stimulate the electrolysis.
Yes. So where does that come from? And the children were saying, well, it inherently must be within the fuel cell. And I'm saying it can't be, because if it is, it's not self-sustaining because it needs electricity.
Have we gone into a perpetual motion discussion here?
Mm-hmm. I think we have.
What we know is that to produce hydrogen to release the hydrogen from water is a very, very energy intensive process, and it's not as efficient as using a fossil fuel. Technically speaking, you'll use as much fossil fuel to release the same amount of hydrogen in terms of calorific value that you've used to release it. Obviously, if you're getting that electricity from the sun, and the sun gives us multiple trillions of kilowatts of free power every day directed at this planet, it's 99.9% of the weather. It comes from the sun. 0.001% of it is affected by man and what we do. There you go. I got in with that dig. Thank you. But the reality is there's a massive amount of energy coming from the sun every day. If we can use it to release hydrogen from water, crikey.
David,
that's us in the, we're in the money, so to speak.
We're talking hydrogen with Extreme E.
No, they're going to use the hydrogen to create electricity, which will be stored in the fuel cell. And then when the cars come in, they'll plug the cars into the fuel cell and charge the cars.
Now, so I do remember listening to an episode of something on Radio 4 where they were talking about how effectively we're not far away from technology, that fuel cells are just water.
Mm.
That you store the electricity, you use the water and you store the electricity in the water. I didn't follow it.
The only byproduct, Lisa, of this whole process in the desert or whatever, the only byproduct apparently is water.
Wow.
And I guess some water just kind of dribbles out of an exhaust thing somewhere. And so they're then going to use that water to water the plants. Desert. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gee, that's a lot better, because we've all seen the pictures, haven't we, of the electric cars plugged into the electric chargers. The electric chargers are plugged into the diesel generators. That all seems a little bit mad, doesn't it? But this sounds way, way more acceptable than that.
It does, and the good thing is with this thing. Hang on a sec. Let me rummage around.
David, I love the fact I can hear your brain working as you're trying to work it out.
Shut up, Colt.
I've got visions of him with a pencil behind his ear, and you can hear all his papers around the desk.
Extreme E. I'm just trying to just some of it. Just so essentially, it's this company, AFC Energy. They're obviously absolute genius people. And Adam Bond, the CEO, is a turbo genius, but speaks a kind of a language that I just didn't really understand. So Julia then said that they'd done a sort of simpler version of this thing, which I watched and kind of got, but just didn't. And it was all to do with electrodes and just bonkers chemistry, physics, whatever. You know, I was still in every lesson, in physics and chemistry. I was busy drawing Malcolm Wilson and Tony Pond's Metro 6R4 on the back of my rough book and colouring it in computer vision colours. I had no interest at all. So it's just so complicated, but I will endeavour to understand it. And Julia's just sent me an email saying she will get somebody to call. She's going to get somebody to call me to talk me through it, which
I think I can feel a video coming on, David. I think you and I should go down and visit these people and do a kind of, you know, a half-wit's guide to understanding it.
Yeah. What's half of a half-wit? A quarter-wit? That's kind of what I am. Hmm. Not even a half-wit.
Well, I'm delighted that she's going to be giving you that lesson, because I do like the way that you tell me stuff on websites that makes me feel intelligent. So if you could write that for me, that would be brilliant.
At least every time I open my mouth, I make you seem even more intelligent than you clearly already are.
Problems.
Genuinely.
So anyway, we kind of hinted that you might be joining us with some breaking news. Is it breaking news? Can you tell us, or do we have to wait?
Absolutely. But it will have broken because when this will come out Tuesday. So yes, what day are we today? Friday. And yeah, the route for January's Monte Carlo has come out and quite radically different. We heard a rumor that there would be no Thursday Monte Carlo start. And that has indeed gone. So Shakedown moves from Wednesday to Thursday morning, the traditional slot, Thursday morning, 9 a.m. And they reckon it's 85% new. There's certainly some stages that I've not heard of. But there are, you know, the Sunday remains largely the same. There's a place, George, you'll know. We've started Cirini from Pier Carver. Pier Carver, half. Just if you go a bit further up that road towards a place called La Mai with a very strange
circumflex,
thing over the I. La Maris, and then you go up through Cirini and back down to Moulinet. So slight change to the Cirini stage. The other stage on Sunday is Col Saint Jean to Col de l'Orme, which I've been on Col Saint Jean before, Saint Jean before, but I think I've been there on a test. There's quite a lot of new stuff. Selenay is on the rundown on Saturday afternoon. All of Friday stages are new.
But still based in Gap, David, for the first
Yeah. So the start of the rally is from Gap on Thursday afternoon. Saint Bonnet is the second stage on
I love that stage.
On Thursday night.
Obviously not Saint Bonnet Le Froid. Different one.
Yeah,
different one. Yeah. It starts from Saint Maurice.
Oh yeah, Saint Bonnet Le Froid is miles away, isn't it?
It is. It's across in the Ardennes.
It's across by Valence. Yeah.
But slightly shorter. I think it's just over 300 kilometers. But yeah, the big thing is no Casino Square start on Thursday morning. But as I've just written, you know, it's quite nice to go to Monte. It's a bit of a pain to drive all the way down there on the Thursday morning, but it is quite nice to be there. But fundamentally, we only care really about who makes it back first on a Sunday afternoon, don't we?
But what I like, David, about the start in Monte Carlo was the Thursday night stages. They would start with a couple of stages on the run back up to
Gap. We're still doing that, but we're just doing them from Gap on the Thursday night.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, and the very good news is that because we're not having to come back up the road from Monaco, we're a couple of hours earlier finishing on that Thursday night. So usually you don't get to bed till sort of 2 o'clock in the morning.
You're soft. This is a rally. We should actually be starting off from our home cities with a 1,000-kilometer road run in noisy rally cars. That'll teach them. To be paid so much money, and then they go down to Nice, and then they immediately start, and then we go out and do all those night stages, and you get 2 hours kipping and off for the next day. That's man stuff.
What did they call that, George? What did they call
stupidity,
that?
Stupidity, I think.
What was the
run? Fashioned call. That's what you call it these days.
It was concentration run. It was called the concentration run. Colin. Yeah, it was great. It was brilliant. It was unbelievably good fun.
Why the changes?
Why the changes? I don't know.
Well, it's reducing our carbon footprint. There you go.
I think maybe it's a sign of how we're going to see things changing in the coming 12 months, 18 months.
I think you're right, Cole, because one thing that they talked about definitely in Monty this year was what is the point of this, of us all tearing down to Monaco? And it's quite right, we spend a day in the car for really nothing at all. It's brought the opener into line with the rest of the championship, hasn't it? With a Thursday morning shakedown.
Here's something. If you're in the UK, so we've been, me and the kids, David, you missed my little talk at the start about the fact we're on holiday, but me and the kids are on holiday. And we've been watching on the BBC iPlayer in the evenings. There's a BBC documentary about Monaco and Monte Carlo. I think it's a five or six part series, and it's narrated by that guy that does, is it First Dates? He's a French sommelier. Got a lovely voice. Fred, narrated by him. My goodness me, it's an eye opener. I'm seeing all these familiar places and hearing all these familiar names around Monaco and Monte Carlo. But the stuff that goes on, David, you wouldn't believe it. I'm actually quite pleased we're not going back there, because I'd have to go and look up some of these people in some of these places and, perhaps get myself into trouble.
But there is an absolute magic about that place. Every January, perhaps these things happen less in January, Cole. But like George said, to sit and have a cup of coffee outside the Café de Paris in the Casino Gorgeous, Square and watch, billion pounds worth of supercars drive past you. And then, every year to walk the Grand Prix track, it's great. And I would be very sad if we ever didn't go to that. Event. True. And we talk about that in a week where we're obviously missing Safari this week. We talked about that last week, didn't we?
We did. Quite a lot.
A lot, yeah, we did. We did. I have a good memory.
Who's paying
attention?
Yeah. Yeah, how else? Anybody else want some news, some breaking news?
Yes. Always.
Rally de Roma next week, which Dirtfish will be covering, by the way. Keep an eye on all of our various channels. But we'll be covering Rally de Roma. Myself and David are going out there with Hyundai, and a big thank you to Hyundai for looking after us. Hearing that Rally de Roma may go as a closed event. There's the Italian government are changing their regulations again with this increasing fear of a second wave of the horrible Lurgy. It looks as if it may go a closed event. Had you heard that, David?
I heard lots of things, ranging from all the way from, the whole thing is going to be off.
I didn't like to say that.
As you say, by Tuesday, we'll either be on our way to, no, we won't actually, will we? Well, no. By Tuesday, we'll know for sure. But this is the problem, isn't it? We can plan all of the events that we want. We've got, five events planned for WRC, and it's great. We're going to Estonia here. We're going to Turkey there. We're going to blah, blah, blah. Yeah, let's just wait and see what happens. Let's wait and see what the governments decide. Because, we had the same issue with Germany a couple of weeks ago. There was a huge spike. Not a huge spike. There was a regional spike of cases. And immediately it brought that event into question as well. So I think we can take absolutely nothing for granted here.
Nothing. That's absolutely right.
Nothing at all. And, a lot of people in the service park are saying that they would be very surprised if we get all of the planned rounds for WRC. And one thing that's definitely in question is Turkey at the moment, and whether they'll actually have the money to run. There's a lot of people who are saying that the government won't provide the funding. It's very difficult times, isn't it, for governments? As we know, around the world we're facing dire economic circumstances, and governments splashing a load of cash on a round of the world championship is not perhaps their biggest priority. So I think we find out there's a deadline apparently next week to see if that happens. And if Turkey goes, then IPA and or Croatia. Well, I think it would definitely be, it would be Turkey, IPA or Croatia that would step in.
Well, David, I'm hearing this morning that there's also Belgium. The Belgian government are very, very concerned about the rising rates of infections. And there is talk that in the next 24 hours that they will reintroduce a ban on gatherings and big sporting events. to take them potentially through until early October time. So again, it's just, it's what you're saying. It's, you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed. We're trying to do everything we can, but we absolutely can't take anything for granted at all. And you know, we've said it before. You know, I think a number of us, and me in particular, were quite critical of the promoter for the first, what, 3 months, 4 months of this crisis, because they were, you know, they were absent without leave. We didn't know what they were doing. They weren't saying anything. They weren't giving any direction. But you have to say that the promoter has done a pretty decent job in trying to put this calendar together. But you have to feel very, very sorry for them, and that you know, it doesn't really matter how much work, how much effort they put in. They are still very much on tenterhooks until the actual first stage is run, because it could be cancelled. Any rally could be cancelled at any point before it runs. And it must be a dreadfully difficult situation for all of the stakeholders concerned.
Well, you only have to see what's happened in this country, where in the UK we've got cricket underway and very stringent rules were put in for the West Indies travelling to the UK to make a test series possible. The English cricket players put into lockdown as well. And one of them chose to ignore what he was supposed to do, head home, visited somebody else, has had to have a test, and has thrown the whole potential test series just by one person not following the rules. And that's kind of where we're at, is people think, oh, I'll be all right. And as long as people are smart enough to just not try and bend the rules to suit themselves, we should be okay. But there are just idiots out there that just think, oh, I'll be all right.
That's a little bit unfair. Jofra Archer is a very fast bowling idiot, Lise. I think we should. It would have helped if he had been one of our poorer players. Well, but it would have to be
so
him.
The rules don't apply to him because he plays cricket. Now, everyone now in the world that's not English now understands how the English system works.
Yes.
It's all about privilege and what you do.
Right. No, it's about
cricket,
it's,
you're okay.
It's about the pace.
David, you've outed yourself, mate.
It's about how quickly they can bowl, George, if they're spin bowlers.
The passion of cricket. The passion of cricket. You've got to love it. You've got to love it.
Jofra Archer had a very good reason for breaking the rules, as far as I'm concerned. He was missing his dog, apparently. So he took a 125-mile detour to go and have some quality time. This is what his friends are saying. May not be true, but his friends are saying he took a 125-mile detour to see his dog.
And let's potentially cost rally. Us, enough and cricket. Potentially cost us the series in doing that. But yes.
That's what could happen with one event, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Lise. And you know, you say there about Belgium, Col, and this is exactly, you know, the nightmare scenario that that, you know, we say we have sympathy with the promoter. Yeah, we do. But you know, ultimately, I have perhaps more sympathy with organisers of events who are, do they do in Ypres? If the government's saying, you know, it's exactly that situation that we had with Finland, that they were locking down or they were controlling mass gatherings until the end of July, weren't they? And then Finland ran the first week in August. What do you do as an event? You know, you either make a very early call and say, nah, we're not going, as Finland and GB did, or you keep gambling. And, you know, right now, Belgium is putting money into Ypres, hoping that it will run. And, you know, these kind of decisions can bankrupt clubs, can bankrupt organisers. You know, ultimately, that's, I think, where the real sympathy lies, because there's a huge volunteer force that run these events. And, you know, there's not a lot of money in a round of the World Rally Championship, but there is a vast amount of effort that goes into them. And it could all be for nothing.
Yeah, you're right. You know, there's not a lot of money for the clubs in organising a round of the championship. But some more positive news, David. We already talked, while you were obviously covering the breaking news, we talked a little bit about our really very insightful 2 days up in M Sport. But some good news from M Sport this week as well, David. They are putting on what looks to be a really decent event in August.
Yeah, it looks, you know, it'll be an absolute cracker, won't it? 45 cars, all from M Sport in the last 20 years. There will be some fascinating cars there. There really will.
Explain a bit more.
So essentially, M Sport wanted to do something to help get British rallying up and running again. And what they've got in Greystoke is a forest that you could essentially kind of close off.
I've had a passenger ride through there with Elvin Evans.
Yeah, so you know, it's not, you know, completely impenetrable, but that you can control access, so it will be behind closed doors. And the idea is that if you own a car that was built by M Sport in the last 20 years. you could take up one of 45 entries. So hopefully we will see Teemu or Esa-Pekka Lappi or Gus or somebody in one of the world cars. And, you know, even the boss man, you know, Malcolm Wilson or Matthew Wilson or Elaine Wilson, even any of the Wilsons, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of cars around there that they could get out and have a go in.
I used to have a Fiesta rally car, David.
Yeah, there you go.
Very basic one. It was a very basic one.
If it was built by M Sport in the last 20 years, George, you want to get hold of it and stick an entry in. So, at the minute,
I built it in my garage.
We'll take rallies when and where we can. I'm sure, I think it's August the 22nd, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And obviously, David, as you said there, it'll be behind closed doors and they'll do their best to ensure that happens. But there'll be plenty of media coverage of that. And I think that's the important thing, isn't it? That, you know, rally fans, yes, they are desperate to get back out onto the stages because if you're a rally fan, then, you know, it's the adventure of rallying that draws you in. But, you know what? Every rally fan knows they can't go to every rally, but what they want to see is competition. They want to see rallying somewhere. And there'll be plenty of coverage of that event up in Greystoke on the media, the social media channels.
Can you hear that? Can you hear that? Can you hear that sound of a tarpaulin being pulled off a dusty M Sport car and expectation and hope of someone? Do you know we can get it going? Somebody somewhere is going to be locked in a garage doing late nights to try and get into Greystoke.
Greystoke.
No, exactly. And it is, you know, it is very, very exciting. I can't, you were up there, Cole, more recently than me. What's the mobile connection like up there? Is a decent service? Could we do?
Yes. Yeah, really good coverage, David. I think I do remember sending a few tweets, looking at a few videos while I was stateside. So, yeah, there's pretty decent 4G up there. So there should be good coverage from the event. And I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. No, it'll be, as we said, you know, any event will take anything right now. We will do anything to get out and see rally cars in action. And hopefully we'll see some next week in Rome. And then the following weekend in Alba, which, crikey, I guess that means that if Rome gets kind of cancelled or locked down, then the same would go for Alba, wouldn't it? Because it's a bit further north, but it's not a million miles away.
I think Alba might be a little easier to manage. It's up in the mountains. It's mountain, as I understand it, it's up in the mountains. David, is that right?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think so.
I think it is. I think it's mountain roads. I think maybe a little easier to manage in terms of numbers. You know, obviously, any sort of event you run in or near to Rome potentially is going to have massive crowds. But take it away from the big cities and maybe it becomes more manageable. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we get both those events. But, you know, one of them would do, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not, you know, in fairness, there is that parade of cars through Rome the Friday night or whenever, but the actual event is based southeast of Rome. Couldn't be southwest because that would be in the sea, wouldn't it?
No, southwest is kind of on the coast, isn't it? South of Fiumicino Airport.
I'm trying to work
so
that
David,
out while I've still got hydrogen.
What were you good at in school? What were you good at? You were not good at chemistry and physics.
PE and quite good at English.
Were you good at PE?
Hey?
What were you? Were you a rugby player?
Yeah. Clearly as well. Rugby and cricket.
What position rugby?
Well, it started out on the wing, Lise, and then ended up, obviously, in centre. When we were very young, there was a hint of going in the scrum, but I got well out of there.
That's where all the action is. That's much more fun in there.
No, definitely not.
I was a blindside flanker.
What, really?
Yeah, played for 10
years.
Wow,
good Lord. You would have absolutely knocked me down flat.
I love rugby. I absolutely think it's all girls should play rugby.
In fairness, if I was, you know, I was a second row briefly and genuinely hated that. It was very claustrophobic. Yeah. But a flanker, I wouldn't have minded being a flanker because you could get away, couldn't you?
And I could. You don't have to be so quick as about. Anyway, we're not talking about rugby. We're talking about rallying. George has gone very quiet, hasn't he?
Sorry, not enough rally cars being talked about here, guys. Yeah, you lose me. I've got a very short attention span. Rugby. Cricket. Sorry.
We have ticked most of the boxes about what we were going to talk about. Is there anything you wanted to bring up, George?
Rally cars? No, I'm just all this talk of rallies and everything, it makes me want to drive again. And unfortunately, I'm not quite in the financial situation that I could ever do that. But it's I might have to just take myself out of the whole equation here because it's painful actually. It's painful.
Is that because you've been looking at your picture on the McLean Gallery again?
Possibly actually. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that already, but. Yeah, I mean, the idea of doing Safari Rally with Malcolm Wilson and a lovely escort sounded quite fun to me earlier on. And now this talk of the Fiesta Rally, which is more or less what it will be, Fiestas and Focuses, and maybe the odd Mark II that Malcolm's built as well down in Greystoke, which is just one of my favourite forests. What a fantastic place.
Have you competed in there, George?
You must know somebody that you can get into.
Well, I've been offered to borrow a rally car a couple of times, but you drive someone's rally car, you know, you get into the seat, you've now taken responsibility for a, you know, 50,000-60,000 pound car. If I put it on its roof, I can't afford to rebuild that car, so it's not fair. So I'm not going to drive it, you know. And you can be driving along, even if, I mean, I have driven rally cars infrequently. Over the last 15-20 years, and it would appear that none of my spectacle skill and touch has particularly been lost. Obviously, my rally craft, my forest craft, would be greatly diminished, but the basic skills still there. And although I still drive quite spectacularly, I drive with a degree of caution. I brake a little bit early, but you just need a little patch on the road, something that you didn't quite see, a wee stone sticking out somewhere to flip a car on its roof. And so I'm just not prepared to take that risk with someone else's car. Despite
George,
my best
efforts. George, I remember you took that risk with a hire car once in Mexico, and it was quite a thrilling ride, I'd have to say. Quite a thrilling,
When did we do that, Colin? That wouldn't have been that spectacular in a hire car, was it?
It was. We were wrecking, and I'd driven, we had those very strange little hire cars that were the simplest, most basic cars. I think they were Nissans. No performance whatsoever. And I thought I was driving out quite neat and quite tidy. We get to the end and you were quite disgruntled and you said, "Colin, get out. I'm driving back. I'm driving back." He said, "It's all about getting the speed up." Because I'm whinging the whole time about how this car is gutless and has no speed. But I was driving neat and tidy. I was like a gentleman skier on the ski slopes. Lovely carved turns. And George was then the hooligan who knocks everyone over going flat down the black runs. I remember that. It was up towards the Cubaletti stage. We ran across the top of the ridge. And I think you got back on this stage in half the time it took me to get out there. It was strangely exhilarating and actually quietly impressive, George. I was very impressed indeed. Yeah, but it would be nice. Driving a hire car, never mind just a road car, it was a hire car.
Normally there's squeaks and groans from Colin when he gets uncomfortable. He doesn't suffer in silence, Colin.
But, and talking about that, David, yes. David, are you still with us? You're typing.
Yeah. No, carry on.
David, what is this nonsense about people asking us for our height and our weight to put us in a rally car in Italy somewhere? What's that all about?
I'm always too afraid to ask, Cole, and I'm certainly too afraid to ask on your behalf.
Give them your size, Cole, and don't go in it. Don't make a fool of yourself again.
One thing is sure is that we will record whatever happens.
Excellent.
And it will be shown on Dirtfish.
I have to say, it hasn't ruined my holiday, but it's just thinking about
it's not a holiday, Cole. It's not a holiday,
Cole, and I can tell.
Your current holiday. I thought you were inferring our week away in Italy was a holiday. That's definitely not a holiday.
No, as far as your wife is concerned, that is not a holiday, David. We are not going to San Gimignano. We are not going to Tuscany. We're not. We're just not.
Passing through. We're passing through on the way
and
to
on
see.
That note.
on the way to see such incredible folk as Sergio Limone and lots of other. Just lots of people. We've got lots of people. We've got a very busy week coming up, Cole, so it'll be good.
Well, an iconic name, Sergio Limone. My goodness me.
You nearly went for the great film director there, didn't you, George?
No. We do like that Sergio too. We love all his spaghetti westerns as well. But Sergio Leone, that is our legendary Lancia and Fiat designer, chief engineer, isn't it?
Well, it sounds like you guys are going to be very busy in the next few weeks. And I really am very much looking forward to seeing the M Sport stuff up on dirtfish.com. If you are listening and this is the first time you listen to Spin the Rally Pod, why not subscribe so that the next episode leaps into your download folder? And we are going to be talking more about proper rally action once we get more cars blasting their way across the stages. But if there is anything else you want us to talk about, drop us a tweet at Dirtfish Rally. And yeah. And any questions you
and
want
don't forget
answered.
Those pictures, Lisa. Don't forget those pictures of George and David.
Yes, that's the other thing as well. We want to. So George was telling us, David, how on that marvellous McLean gallery, looking back at the top 10 Safari Rally photographs, if you go to picture number 5, the car on the left is driven by one Mr. George Donaldson, not, as it says, Juha Kankinen, because there was a little bit of behind the scene.
It's creative photo shoot it was. Creative 5-day photo shoot, yeah. Lovely. Yeah.
Mr. Kankinen wasn't available for that photo. But we want photos of George and you in situ. So if anybody's taken photos that you know of David Evans,
Colin. Because you've been around a long time, David,
photos of me.
And long Colin as well. You won't actually get any of me because I was always stuck in a studio in a different part of the world. So yeah, any action photos of the Dirtfish expert panel of Spin the Rally Pod, please send them in or tweet them at Dirtfish Rally, because that'll give us a real laugh. I do like picture number 7, by the way, in the McLean photography, because somehow, and I'm guessing that's Colin, has managed to turn a rally car into a hippopotamus. It kind of looks like a hippo rearing out of the water. I mean, the photos are just absolutely brilliant. We're so lucky to have the McLean photography on the dirtfish.com website. And if you do like looking at pretty pictures of rally cars, that's the place to go. I think we've covered all the topics we're going to talk about today, lads, haven't we?
That really you, George, on the left?
It is really me, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
was that a promo shot?
It was a promo shot, 5-day photo shoot. I drove 4,500 kilometres in about 4.5 days, something like that. Yeah.
What would be the tactic in there? Were you
clearly weren't crawling through there. But
We were cracking on. I mean, we would the helicopter would go up, and we were driving across Suswa. And to I think it was to Imali, and then we were going to go up the Mau Escarpment, and then the helicopter spotted that there had obviously been some rain, and it was about 20 kilometers off towards Element towards Naivasha from Suswa. So we went over the road and followed some direction from the helicopter. I was literally following in Ian's dust most of the time, so it was quite a tricky drive because the rule was, you know, as long as I'm following Ian, nothing will go wrong. Well, you can imagine that you get several kilometres of dust, so I was driving with about 10 or 15% visibility a lot of the time, but having to keep up because if I fell behind, I was that ruined the photo shoot.
But talking of limited visibility, in this picture that we're talking about, your screen is completely covered in mud.
Yeah, probably. I've forgotten to switch the wipers on, probably.
But they had special wipers, didn't they? Or different kind of...
There was big hoses onto the wipers, and we had there was like eight or even 10 litre water bottles in the back.
I love that sort of thing.
Of the cars, yeah.
That's so cool.
The wiper motors were the original wiper motors, but they were completely unwound and rewound by our electricians, or by, I think maybe it's just some company in Germany, and they changed all the solder from lead solder to silver solder so it could take the temperature. And those wipers, they could go, you know, when you put your wipers on fast speed, it always feels quite quick.
Yeah.
In reality, these ones would go about 3 times the speed.
Seriously?
Yeah. I think the wipers probably are going on that photograph. It's just that the photograph probably captured a splash.
Yeah.
And that muddy section was only a couple of kilometres, but we went backwards and forwards through it about 3 times and then went off heading north. Can't remember where we stayed that night. It was fabulous. Best 4.5, 5 days I ever had on Safari Rally. It was just amazing. I drove every single section of the event.
I've got to say, as well, on Dirtfish Dovecastle.com, given that we're coming out Tuesday. From the weekend, you will be able to read Robert Reed, quite literally read Robert Reed's memories of the Safari Rally. And having talked to him about those, there are some, it's a great read. You have to dig in and right. enjoy that.
And I tell you what, there's just some fantastic photography. I was going to say photograph number 9. Is brilliant as well with Richard Burns and Robert trying to replace a wheel.
He didn't actually talk about that. And that, in fairness, he wasn't trying to change the wheel. At least what happened was he had damaged the suspension on the previous section. And if you remember, George, that the road, I think we talked about this last week, the road into Sossois in 02 was horrific. It was just, it was that volcanic dust. And as you came into the service park or into the road that led you in, there was a big hole. And Richard and Robert were talking about this on the way in because the left front was jammed back against the arch. And they couldn't do anything about it. So as they came in, they tried to kind of go quite quickly through this dust. And as soon as they hit the hole, that left front dug in and it just spun the car around. And then they'd taken the wheel off to try and dig the car out, but it didn't go anywhere.
I was standing there next to McLean when he took that photograph. To Colin. I was there.
We were all standing there.
Tell me what that tarpaulin's doing then as well.
They were trying to put it under the wheel, these, to try and get some traction.
It seems to be on the bonnet as well, though.
But that was, everybody was just, and the reason that George was there, I'll tell you now, was to check that there was absolutely no outside assistance from Peugeot.
The bottom line was, I was actually standing there saying, and I said to Robert very quietly, I said, Robert, go and get a bloody tow rope and get a Land Cruiser to pull you through. And he looked at me and because you can imagine how stressed they were. As far as I was concerned, they were blocking the road. Yeah. Now, the fact that you could go around, it's neither there, but the regulation says if you're a hazard, if you're blocking the road, you can use external help. I would have told them all the way in.
But there was enough people there that you could have pulled. I'm sure you could have pulled.
Yeah, but there was a lot of the servicing rules had been transgressed in that year and the previous year, so people were very scared about what you could do and what you couldn't do.
Right, but I wrapped up about 10 minutes ago.
But just before we go, Lise, just the last word on Safari. I just love this bit of detail, this sort of stuff from Robert. He was saying that when you were flying into Nairobi, you used to have to sort of strain to look out the window. Presumably, he would have been in business class, so it would have been quite a long way to the window from where he'd got his feet up. And he said you'd look out as you were coming down, and if it was all lush and green, then you knew you were in for a rocky ride. It was going to be really, really rough because there'd been a lot of rain to green the vegetation. And if it was barren and burned, then it would just be a little bit smoother or perhaps just less rough, which is great.
A fast safari, yeah.
That kind of detail,
great
is,
detail yeah,
is great.
It's lovely.
It's great. Absolutely. So go and read it.
And I think the next time maybe we'll hit the photographs again on the website because it's so lovely to actually know what's happening on the other side of the camera as well because the pictures are so iconic that actually having people that were there when they were taken makes it even better. Well, thanks, guys. I've done all the plugging. We'll be back with another episode of Spin the Rally Pod very, very soon.